This is Inkstuds on CITR 101.9 FM, radio show where we talk about comics. My special guest today is John Kirschbaum.
Hi, Robin.
Do I pronounce properly, John?
That's it.
Kirschbaum. Excellent. And John's new book is Petey and Pussy, a tragic tale of of one bird in a life with a dog and a cat.
Yeah.
And twatwurst.
Yeah. That seems to resonate with people. I'm not sure why.
You put it on the cover.
Well, but you know, on the cover, you don't really know what it is, even though I did add a little drip coming off of it. I'm not sure if people will notice that, but yeah, there's a lot of that kind of stuff in there. You have to look close.
It's a wonderful, wonderful book from from our good friends at Fantagraphics.
Yeah, and Jacob Covey did a great job with the design and the cover. I was really, really happy with it. And it was kind of the first experience I've had with sending stuff out and saying, go ahead. You know, I used to do pretty much everything myself. So it was a little bit of a learning curve on letting go and letting him just do what he's... But I was really happy with it. I think it looks really nice.
He's super talented. And actually, I know he was really hyped about this project because he actually sent me in advance the first chapter, like, dude, you got to check this out.
That's great.
A little on the sly thing occasionally.
Yeah, yeah, that's great.
And so I was like, oh, this looks good. So
yeah, they've been really great. Very helpful. And yeah, I've been really pleased with it. So
tell me a bit about Petey and Pussy. Where do they come from?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm gonna be vague on years because I just frankly don't remember. But it was quite a while ago that through a friend of a friend, I got hooked up with someone and an editor. And again, I can't remember this guy's name either. But they were going to sort of relaunch an old sort of Mad style magazine. And I think it was from DC at the time. Like, it was going to be, you know, under their guise, I guess, but I can't remember the name of it, and it never came to fruition. But I went and I met the editor, and he had said to me, you know, you do whatever you want, he says, but I think it would be in your best interest to come up with some characters, which was something I really didn't do. You know, I hadn't done it in the Wiggly Reader or any of my previous stuff, having like a reoccurring set of characters. But he said, you know, it's going to be creator-owned. You'll own your copyright, and it's in your own best interest to come up with some characters. Maybe they'll catch on, and you can, you know, roll them into something.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, good idea.
That's decent. Yeah.
And his only other request was that I not do anthropomorphic animals. Well, no. In particular, he did not want, and I'll leave out the cursing, but he didn't want any of those human beings with animal heads. It was like a pet peeve he had. He was like, you know, just don't want that stuff.
Like Hepcats.
What?
Hepcats.
I don't know what that is, but yes, exactly.
It's
like
an alternative
that
comic from the 90s that disappeared into obscurity, and all the characters were human with these animal heads.
Yeah, well,
heads.
I mean, it's a very common, you know, he was like, don't. So, you know, I came home and I'm sitting down thinking, and it was kind of the first thing, well, if he doesn't want that, maybe he'd like this. And, you know, that's sort of where they came from. I just drew up a couple of strips, and he liked them, but again, the project never came to fruition, so I made a little mini-comic out of those original strips, and then eventually put a short story into one of the Wiggly Readers, and then spun that off into an issue of Petey and Pussy comic, all of which I published all of those myself. So, but that's really about it. And I've enjoyed doing it. I got a lot of good response from it. So I think they really are the only sort of reoccurring characters I do at this point. That's it's not a very exciting story, I'm afraid, but that's where they came from. I was just sort of being cheeky and thought it would be funny to... And I think he did appreciate, actually, the humor and the fact that I had done sort of almost what he asked me not to do. But anyway.
I think they can be best probably be described as like a couple of cantankerous middle-aged men.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, I haven't given like a lot of... I don't give like a lot of thought to what it is that makes them do what they do. You know, I didn't set out to say, oh, I'm going to comment on middle-aged men or how people are sort of like animals sometimes. And obviously that's sort of what just happens because they are part human and they are part animals, and they succumb to both of those, you know, those tendencies. They do a lot of animal things, and then they cozy up to a bar, and they have a few drinks, too, sometimes. So, yeah.
Well, it doesn't feel like a social commentary at all.
So oh, well, thank God.
We'll stick away from that. It just feels like a silly comic.
Yeah, that's good.
About,
that's really all it's intended to be.
You know, and it's as a silly comic should be, different layers of ridiculousness that permeate throughout.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good way of putting it.
Well, I do try and like to layer stuff a lot. I mean, I put a lot of effort into trying to make it dense so that you can maybe even read it a couple of times and every time get a little something. Like, you know, I don't know if you noticed the drip on the cover, but, you know, I'm hoping after you know, you go back to it a couple of times, you're like, oh, wait, you know, one of those type of things. I like trying to deliver that type of subtle, you know, undertone to the comics, but...
Let's talk a little bit about what got you into comics. I have a feeling you read your fair share of Mads as a young man.
Oh, I did. Yeah, that was a big influence. I think probably my biggest single cartoonist influence was probably Don Martin.
Mm-hmm.
I liked his stuff a lot, and I read a lot of Mad, and I flirted with some superhero comics. I was into Spider-Man for a little while, but never really caught on to those. I sort of, you know, went toward the humor stuff, and as I grew a little older, and I started getting a subscription to National Lampoon. I probably wasn't more than like 13 or 14 years old at the time, maybe even younger, and I was getting National Lampoon delivered to the house. And, you know, there's naked women in it and everything, and, you know, all my parents knew was that there were comics in it, and I liked it, and I would just take my copy and run upstairs, you know. And they had, you know, National Lampoon had the funny pages with, you know...
Was this when they had, like, Drew Friedman and...
Yeah, Drew Friedman and Gen Wilson.
Yeah.
Who am I thinking of? Shari Flanagan.
Yeah.
Bobby London. People like that. So I enjoyed doing that, you know, reading that, and heavy metal then also, and I liked some of the science fiction fantasy stuff there, but they, I think, also had a section in the middle that had, like, humor comics, and that's usually what I would go to and read first.
I find with heavy metal, there's, you know, there's some neat stuff, but there's just way too many barbarians.
Yes, exactly right. I always found some of that stuff, I was going to name a name, but I won't do that, but I always found some of that stuff just a little creepy. I was never really one for sort of erotic comics. I couldn't really ever figure out why that, you know, like, you know, I don't know. It wasn't a huge form of entertainment for me, even as a really horny 14-year-old kid or whatever. I just wasn't, you know, I was like, okay, yeah, boobs, okay, boobs. Ah, here's the funny stuff, you know? So,
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think, actually, they might have even have been, at the time, they might have even have been doing that, the horny goof, was that?
The Mobius strip?
Yeah, I think that might have been, like, either being re-serialized, or I don't know how old that is, or whatever, but... I think that was actually in there at a while, and that made me laugh too.
Well, that one
and there
was
some. Yeah, I'm sorry.
That one was just ridiculous. Like that was.
Oh, I don't even remember. I remember it being beautifully drawn, nicely colored. I liked looking at it. I'm not sure. I couldn't tell you anything about the story or. You know,
I think that's how it goes with Mobius, though.
Is it?
You look at it; it's beautiful, you know. But
I can't.
After you finish it, do you remember what happened? Not really.
Yeah, no, I can't honestly say I've read anything else by him, but yeah, beautiful, beautiful artwork and stuff like that. But needless to say, I think if I, you know, went back and looked for them, probably stored at my parents' house somewhere in the attic. Or, I'm sure I could probably find all of my old Mad magazines. I doubt I held on to any of the Heavy Metal or the National Lampoons or anything like that. But I did enjoy them at the time, and they were pretty influential, I think. And they led me to other things, too, you know, because I would read some of the stuff in National Lampoon and then go look in, like, the humor section in the bookstores for gag cartoons. And I think, you know, that's how I sort of stumbled on Cliven and things like that. And even The New Yorker, I think, I was getting at a young age. I don't think I probably got most of the humor there, but there were comics in there. And more so than, like, long-form comic books, I think I was always sort of gravitated toward comic strips and comic strip collections and gag cartooning. You know, I probably bought a lot of New Yorker cartoonist collections without really knowing much about the magazine, and then eventually, you know, got a subscription to the magazine or something like that. But I always enjoyed looking at it, and I always enjoyed sort of thinking about how they were writing those gags and, you know, the different approaches that the different artists had. I'm afraid I probably can't be more specific than that, but I did enjoy them quite a bit, and probably, even though, like I said, most of it was probably over my head.
Now, for yourself, when doing gags, you tend to stick with longer gags than the short.
Well, I actually, I've done a lot of both. In fact, I started out trying to be a New Yorker cartoonist. That was really what I would have loved to have done. And I submitted to them for years and years and years. And you know, they had a Wednesday drop-off, and I actually worked around the corner, so every day I would go, and I would drop stuff off. And but I never had much luck. I can't even say that I was very good at it, but I did enjoy doing it. And I still enjoy doing, like, just a quick gag cartoon. But, yeah, I think that the longer form allows for that denseness and that layering, which I enjoy doing. I enjoy putting that into the work.
Mm-hmm.
So I have sort of gravitated to that over the past few years and stuff, yeah.
Well, you kind of go into the, I guess, the Evan Dorkin school of a full illustration. Not necessarily as maddening as Evan will get with his, I guess, layer of mundane detail.
What's that?
I'm just saying. I'm sorry.
I just didn't follow that one.
Well, just your own artwork style. It's a lot more complex than a lot of the type of New Yorker stuff, especially it's kind of like something like with Evan Dorkin,
right?
You know, with great a lot
artist.
Of detail, just without being as, you know. Maddening is, say, someone like Evan Dorkin.
Right. Well, I will say that I actually did sell a cartoon to the New Yorker eventually, and actually was published in the New Yorker. I had a gag cartoon, and you'll just have to go and find that one on your own. It's a lone one. It is included in that big tome of Complete New Yorker. It's on the disc somewhere, so you can look it up if you're interested. But I sort of got... I worked really hard on it for a long time, but I always felt like I was on the outside looking in. I couldn't figure out exactly what it was that they were, you know, I would get like sort of a glimmer of hope, and then couldn't figure out why it wasn't working out. And again, it might just be that I wasn't really very good at it. So it's a real, you know, it's a tough thing to do. It really is. Got a lot of respect for those guys. It's really hard to do and be good at it. So.
Well, they have a tight crew, I think, of people that are they've chosen as their...
Yeah, and maybe that was it. I just felt like I was no way I was going to break into that. It just didn't seem doable, I think. And I think around the same time... And I had. I sold them some gag cartoons to Spy Magazine and to eventually National Lampoon. So I actually did. But then, like, you know, Spy went under and National Lampoon got bought up and... Those kind of things sort of dried up, and at the same time, I had a friend mention the Xeric Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And by that time, I had tons of material I just couldn't do anything with. Nobody was interested in publishing it. So I applied for that and got that in, I don't know, I don't even remember what year that was, but and that, so that was the beginning of the Wiggly Reader then. And I think probably since then, I probably have not done much gag cartooning unless something sort of just occurred to me, you know, jot it down. But don't spend a lot of time working on that kind of stuff.
When did you decide to take the cartoonist path?
Oh, well, you know, I'm not sure if I ever really decided that as much as it just sort of happened. You know, I always tell people it's not something I really love to do. It's something that I have a hard time not doing. But I don't know exactly when or if I really made a conscious decision to take that route.
Mm-hmm.
I can recall, like, even in college, people would ask me that, and I'd be like, no, I don't think I'm going to do that. There's absolutely no money in that.
There's a villain in my head and he's giving me shocks. Shock, shock, shocks. Shock, shock, shock. Save me from me, save me from me. His name is Leather McWhip and he needs to be stopped. Stop, stop, stop. Stop, stop, stop. Fly above me, fly above my room. Everybody had a second love to make you want to come on, but my mind was a splinter and it never was down. I swing around the kids and from my head of love and try to fall on. But you saved me, saved me, saved me, saved me. I'm here to sing a song, a song about privilege, the spikes you put on your feet when you were crawling and dancing to the top of the human shit pile, shit pile. Somehow you managed to elucidate something that was on all of their minds, all of their minds. And other people see themselves in you and I can see them in you too. In my head, there's a bed, it's a name. Some lovely leather bound poison. No more ghosts. When the most I've withdrawn,
Did you go to art school?
I did. I went to Parsons in New York City. Yeah.
The prestigious Parsons.
What's that?
The prestigious Parsons.
Yeah. I mean, it was a nice school, and I enjoyed it. I met a lot of really great people there, and I'm not sure if I learned as much as I should have, but I don't know if that's necessarily. I'm not sure that's necessarily the fault of the school. I spent a lot of time hanging around in the cafeteria. Not much to learn there. Well, actually, no. You'd be surprised.
But, so was it in the illustration area?
Yeah. I majored in illustration. That's right. So concepts and all that kind of stuff. But at the time, I don't believe there was a single course geared toward cartooning.
Mm-hmm.
I think I might have taken a humor illustration class, and I had a few teachers that would sort of let you experiment on your own. They had a sort of an open, as long as you were delivering work on critique day, you could almost sort of do whatever you want. And I think I did dabble a little bit in doing some comics. But really, I have to think that it was probably not until after college that I started really working toward making a career out of being a cartoonist, as well as an illustrator. I never gave up on any of that stuff. I always took the jobs, and I enjoy that, too. It's a different, totally different thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're working for someone, you know, you're following orders, you're delivering a product for them.
Yeah.
And so the comics are much more self-indulgent and maybe a little bit more fun sometimes, also probably a little more frustrating, or maybe just different. But I enjoy doing both of them. You know, they're like different muscles, you know. I'm not sure that I ever really made a conscious decision to be a cartoonist. It either was just an innate thing that it was always lurking in the background or just under the surface, or I just glided into it and didn't notice.
It's just something that ends up happening.
Yeah, yeah. Do you hear that a lot from people?
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I think you'd have to be, you know, you'd sort of have to be nuts to say, oh, that's what I want to do, and knowing that it really is not easy, you know.
The thing I think I see sometimes is where people, like yourself, it's something they're going to do, but it's just, and they hit the reality of, how economically feasible is it and stuff. And that's
right.
The challenge where people, that's what they want to do. That's what they, just how to support and live at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, again, it ended up being something I seem to not be able to not do.
Yeah.
There have been many times I was like, all right, this is not working out. I got to find something different to do. And then, you know, it just, you think of something, a good idea for something. Like, oh, you know, this will be the one. But, still waiting on that. We'll see.
Let's talk about some of your comics.
Okay.
One that I really loved, you sent me a nice package of goodness, is Timber Doodle.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of my particular faves.
Thanks. That was from a while ago. I think that was nominated for an Ignatz at SPX one year. That's a pretty popular one. A lot of people write to me and ask for that one. I don't know why. It's kind of a bizarre story, but it does have a lot of that layering that we spoke about earlier. It's, I mean, hopefully, you know, I try to put like three or four jokes on every page. Some of them are way in the background. Some of them are puns. I love puns, bad puns. but it really is just a bunch of silliness with a sort of semi-tragic ending, but it's really just silly. But for some reason, that resonates with people. I don't know why.
Well, you gotta hit, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Why question it?
Now, the Bernard in Petey and Pussy.
Yeah.
He's a tragic, tragic man, or tragic bird.
Yeah, he's a bird brain, though. I mean, he's, you know.
You don't have a love for birds, I noticed that.
You know, I had a bird, and whose name I cannot say over the air because it contains profanity, but it had a lot to do with the fact that they poop everywhere. You can't diaper them. I tried. You just can't do it. Yeah, the thing was a machine. You know, you're like, all right, I won't feed it for a week. And still, no, I'm just kidding. It just never. I didn't buy the bird. I inherited it from my sister, who had a bird and then decided that she preferred to have a cat. They didn't get along. So I inherited the bird, and I liked the bird to a degree, but it really got on my nerves. Wake me up in the morning. You know, just again, I can. That was like 20, 25 years. I can still find poop from that bird. You know, in my parents' house, that you just will go and like, oh, they're everywhere, nook and cranny. It was amazing. So I have no great love for birds, but I don't know if that's really the reason I torture him so much. I don't know. I'm not quite sure, and I'm not sure exactly why that is funny to me. That poor bird is in so much pain. I think, isn't there like an old saying that it's, comedy is tragedy plus time or distance? Like, as long as it's happening to somebody else, it's okay. You know, you get smacked in the nuts. Can I say nuts?
Yeah, no, you're in Canada. You can say whatever you want.
Oh, okay. You get smacked in the nuts, not so funny.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're watching America's Home Video and that guy gets smacked in the nuts, that's hysterical. You know, it hurt him just as much as it hurt you, but for some reason that's fodder for humor, and I think it probably doesn't go much deeper than that. But, I actually do have a little sympathy for Bernie. I mean, I don't think I would enjoy being in a cage, but, and my original plan for him was he was never going to get out. Like, you would never see him outside the cage. And I immediately broke that rule in both of the stories I think I've written. But
things just go worse when he gets
out. Yeah, that's right. He never seems to get far anyway. So, but a lot of people relate to him for some reason. The two things about Petey and Pussy that I always found surprising, that one, he seems to be the most, like, I don't want to say popular, but people are always asking me about him. And the other thing is that, I don't know why this is, but it really surprised me that, for some reason, a lot of women come up to me at the table and tell me how much they like Petey and Pussy. And I would just, and I guess maybe that's terribly sexist on my, but just, it just seems like it's, like, you wouldn't, why do you like that? You know, you really shouldn't like that. It's mean, and it's not nice, and I don't know if it's because they're pets or because they're, you know, bald men. I don't know what it is that attracts to them, but it seems to, it just always catches me by surprise. Anyway.
Well, I guess the neat thing is that you really are able to capture their animal movements.
Oh, you see, that's nice. I appreciate that, because I haven't owned a dog in a long time, and I've never owned a cat.
Really?
And I think even in the three stories that are included in the Petey and Pussy book, you can see that in the beginning, they had rubbery legs, and in a way, it wasn't sort of working for me. I wanted the animal halves to be really animal-y.
Yeah.
And, that's why Pussy's always having trouble with his paws and the constant frustration of, you know, wanting to pick something up, but not...
The peanut jar.
Yeah, not being able to do it, and... You know, there are many recurring themes in Petey and Pussy, and I have many stories written that hopefully will someday see the light of day, and it's a reoccurring theme, this problem of not, that frustration of not being able to do what you're trying to do. I think all the characters in that book have it, sort of. They're not all quite functioning at 100%. Needless to say.
Not all the synapses are firing.
No.
Well, and that's the thing. The thing I really appreciate is that they're not, and like, I understand what that previous editor was totally saying about the hatred of anthropomorphic animals,
right,
where it's just like, I can't really draw a face, so I'm going to make an animal head.
Is that what it is? Is that how a lot of that stuff comes about?
I think that's it. I think it's someone who wants to do, like, funny animal cartoons and...
It doesn't tie into that, furry movement. I mean, which is something I'd never heard of before. Bob Fingerman told me about it a long time ago. He was writing a story about it or something.
I know
like
the
that.
Story.
Do you? And I was like, no. And I, you know, I have seen mentions of PD and Pussy. That group has taken notice. There's something they find that sort of intriguing. I'm not sure why, but yeah. You know, and I
you're
whatever,
on the list.
Yeah, and whatever floats your boat, really. I could really care less, but I don't quite understand it myself. But
yeah,
I can't think of any kind of you know, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I could talk about the absurdity or interest of furries for a while. It's I had an old friend who I hadn't seen him in a couple of years. I went and visited him, and I found out what a furry was pretty quickly. It's like, here's our costumes. The costumes. I sell them online. Here's my tail. See, this tail's got a weight in it, so it wags.
Oh, my.
And then there's the images he draws as well, which are...
Yeah,
furry porn pictures, and I was like, okay.
Yeah. See, I am not going to. I cannot point fingers. It reminds me of a time I was, and I don't mean to continue the name drop, but I was talking to. I was sort of teasing Mike Dawson.
Yep.
He did a book, Freddie and Me.
Yeah, and he's going to be on in April.
Oh well, he's you'll have fun talking to him. He's a smart guy, very funny, knows a lot about comics and stuff. But I was teasing him one time about the detail and the love and the rendering of the chest hair on Freddie Mercury in Freddie and Me. And you know, and then like I think later on that night I went home and I was still finishing Petey and Pussy and I'm drawing hair on the testicles of a dog. And I'm thinking, oh geez, that's really not even comparable. I have to call up and apologize. So I'm not gonna badmouth the furries there. They're cool in my book.
I took a tram into the fourth dimension, 'cause I had the blues are throwing it all away. Just give me a tequila, I'll slam it the 4D way. And when I got there, you know, it had certain similarities, like no smoking anywhere and hiding in the car seat to avoid paying the fare. 4D tequila, anyone? And don't think we didn't dance to records by the fifth dimension in the disco sphere, like Kublai Khan. Kublai Khan. And it was pretty goddamn hazardous. Out on the Ilminster bypass. Out on the Ilminster bypass.
Out on the Ilminster bypass.
Backward planing to the theme park. We took a ride from the Banjo Klein mega bottle ride. Well, are we spewed inside, back and forth in time, mathematics and pride inside. We've gone Vulcan.
We've gone Vulcan anyway.
It absolutely has to happen.
Yeah, there's no smoking anywhere.
Throw it all away.
Yeah.
Somebody had to have her.
Tell me about the I guess the pet owner of of Pussy.
The old lady.
The old lady that likes to make use of her fridge.
Yeah, that's right. Well, she's it's funny because a lot of people don't ask me about her. I think maybe they're just afraid.
She's and it's funny you're talking about like sexuality in comics, and like this is one of the most it's. The most, I guess it's like, you know, well, it's naked old women. It's,
Here's my take on that, where that comes from, is that, I try in my humor to not be mean to any particular group, or it just doesn't drive me as a cartoonist to, make fun of people, and I was always afraid, people, that's really not nice about old people. You're really making fun of, because really that problem, that lady's story is she's just old and a little bit senile. There's really not much more wrong with her. She's drunk and she's horny all the time. But I mean, I don't know. I'm drunk and horny most of the time too. But that's terrible. But you know what I mean. And the way I sort of justify having fun with somebody who's senile and old is that I'm hoping I get there too. At some point, I keep making references with her that she once dated Abraham Lincoln, trying to she's got the hots for Abe, and she's always talking about Abe and don't get near me, Abe. I'm trying to establish the fact that she's very old, very, very old. And, the fact that she's even walking around is cause for celebration. But in a way, I think I established that character because, again, in the beginning, and these things change as you work on them, I never planned to address the issue of PD and Pussy's and Bernie's peculiarity.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed a home base for Pussy. And PD's a stray. He lives on the streets. And I
Poor
needed
guy.
A, what's that?
Poor guy.
Yeah. I needed somebody who wasn't going to acknowledge or react to it. And for the most part, I just ignore it because I have no real reason for them to be the way they are. There is no real... They just are. And so that is why I sort of established his home base as, being run by this person who... And I also liked the idea that Pussy really was running the household.
Yeah.
Which you don't get a real glimpse of in these few stories that I've done, but... Again, I hope to establish it in some later stories that you'll see. He's how does that woman get by? It's because he does a lot, he also is not very helpful in a lot of other ways. So that was the deal. But again, I sort of justify it, at least to myself, in the sense that I hope to be old, someday soon too. Well, not someday soon, but someday too. That I'll grow old, and so I'm sort of just making fun of someplace I'll be in a few years. So.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right.
I think so.
Well, I'm just going to keep telling myself that anyway. So.
Oh, it's a tragic household.
Yeah.
So, let's talk a little bit about the Wiggly Reader. Your
sure.
Three issues total, was it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
The Zurich Foundation paid for the first two. I had sent the original, the application or my original proposal to them was to do three issues. And I think they gave me the money for three issues, and I was not able to complete them, in a decent enough time. You have to sort of use the money before a certain time or you lose it. And so what I did was I ended up just making the first two issues a little bigger. They were going to be 24-page comics. I think they're all 32. And then... did the first two, and then with the proceeds of the first two, funded the third one, but that's when the money ran out. So, but I was pretty grateful for that. They were, you know, really, if you're an aspiring cartoonist, it's the way to go. Can you do? Are they open to international cartoonists? Can you apply from Canada to the Xerox Foundation? Do they care where you?
I had some friends that did.
Oh, okay, so there
so,
you go.
I don't know. None of them got it, but
I can. You know, again, it was a while ago, so maybe it's changed. But man, the process was so easy, and they're so helpful. It's really a nice thing to do and a way to go because. It's hard. The only problem that I really faced was just distribution. Once the comics were done and printed and everything, I really didn't have a good way of getting them to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that really, I think that's probably what ended that run more than anything else. Even the money wise, if I had been able to just get them out into stores on a regular basis, or a reliable basis, I would have kept doing it, even if it meant just being an expensive hobby for myself. But it really was fruit, but you just couldn't do it.
It seems like you put a lot of work into your comic, so you wouldn't be able to do a regular thing at this volume of material.
Well, I do. I have sort of a really, we don't need to go into it in any detail, but I have a laborious way of working. Is that the right word? Is that a word at all?
And actually, detail's good because some people are actually pretty fascinated by how other people put their comics together.
Well, I just, it takes me a long time. I'm very, so I am not, I don't consider myself to be like a fantastic draftsman. I can't, you know, people ask me for sketches and I have a tendency to draw the same picture of myself, which doesn't even look like me really, but, and I've had people go, oh, they'll come and ask you for a sketch, and you're doing it, and they'll have people go, oh, that guy again? You know, and I'm like, that's me.
Hey!
Oh, I know how to draw. But I panic when people ask me to draw a drawing of Petey and Pussy for them because, you know, I'm kind of one of those draw, erase, you know, and to do a little quick sketch is, but it's really, it's gotten to the point where now I think I need to even maybe find a different way of working because it's too slow. It's just I can't put that amount of time into the work. But you know, it's like all these other things we've been talking about. It's not really even a conscious approach. I'm just drawing until it looks done.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I like. And I'm drawn to other people's work that has a lot of detail and little things to look at, and I love to pore over. The other day in the New York Times Magazine, there was a cross section of a cruise liner, you know, like an advertisement for a cruise liner that there was like a cutaway, and it was this I'm like, oh my god, and I tore it out, and I'm like, I got to put this on my wall, and I'm looking, I'm like, what are you nuts? Throw that away. You know, but I loved looking at all the little, look at those little seats in that little auditorium there, you know? Mental, just totally mental. But, I enjoy that in other people's work and sort of enjoy putting it into my own.
You should read some Dan Zetwalk comics then.
Oh, he's great. He's great. I enjoy, and the thing I love now is the thing, and I don't read a lot of comics, I got to tell you. Probably more now than ever in my life. But I don't read a lot. But I do really enjoy the Leon Beyond strip that he's doing with Kevin Huizenga. And I think maybe Ted May might be doing them too.
Yep.
Those things crack me up. I had the opportunity to talk to Kevin at at SPX. Mm-hmm. And I was telling him how, and this is kind of embarrassing, but like when they first started doing them, I'm reading them and I'm going, no. No, that can't be true. Totally, totally missing the point that they were, and after I read like five, I'm like, oh, okay, I get you. I think he actually took a little bit of pleasure in that. I'm not stupid, but they were done so cleverly that, but those are enjoyable. But I like Dan's, he does like diagram kind of stuff. I enjoy that kind of stuff a lot. Yeah, it's very good.
Now, I was just looking through the stack of comics here, and the Weekly Reader number 2.
Yeah.
The Abe Lincoln.
Yeah.
Do you have a particular predilection towards Abe? Because we were just talking about the old lady.
Yeah.
Who had her?
Yeah, that's if I do, it's a subconscious thing. I don't know if I have a favorite president. but I guess he'd be up there. This is another thing where I cannot recall. Probably because I just didn't, at the time, think it was all that important to make a mental note of it. But I don't recall where the idea for that came from. I really don't. I know that my theory or my approach, I guess, when doing all of the Wiggly Reader covers was that, I'm not a designer. I don't fancy myself being some sort of graphic designer. And so I thought, I'm going to just undesign. There's going to be like no design, other than a logo. I'll just do a big drawing and wrap it around the cover, and hopefully make like a little gag out of it. And I don't know if there was anything more than that. I enjoyed painting that cover quite a bit and drawing it quite a bit. Again, it's one of those scenes that has tons and tons of stuff going on in it, but I'm afraid I probably not that I don't even know if that was your question, but I can't even tell you where that possibly came from. Or, I think other than those two instances, the old woman's dating history and that cover, I think I've managed to stay away from Abe Lincoln and most of my other stuff. But I'm young yet, so I don't know. We'll see.
That's okay. It would be, I'd be happy to see more Abe Lincoln.
Yeah. My guess is probably I saw something on TV or something like that. It's just something minor.
Civil War documentary again.
Yeah, exactly right. Or something about his assassination or something. That's exactly what happened with that homecoming story that I sent you. I think I sent you that. About the salmon swimming.
Yeah.
I just was watching TV and there was a documentary on salmon swimming upstream. I'm like, oh. That's kind of funny. what a terrible and it was like one of those nature shows where they imbue the fish with sort of human qualities. Do you know what I mean? To sort of dramatize that
they're anthropomorphizing.
Well, I guess so. Yeah, I would imagine that the Abe Lincoln cover was probably came about in some sort of similar fashion.
Now, the fish story you're talking about, that was in your collection, The Drunk Drawer. Is that still available for folks?
I don't think it is in that. It's just a standalone. That was just a standalone mini comic. I don't think I included it in
Okay,
the junk
it's
drawer.
Just not in my stack of stuff I brought with me today.
Yeah, but the junk drawer, I have a few of them. I only made about 100 of those, and the plan was to make 200, and at some point I think my wife came into my studio and saw me crying and said, you don't have to make that many, It was brutal. I will never do that again.
Well, that's quite the process you have there, the fold-over pages, the cardboard cover.
Yeah, and to a degree, I really enjoy making mini comics and stuff, although I often liken it to, like, a 40-year-old man's version of a lemonade stand, only that I would make more money selling lemonade, But that's sort of what it feels like. Sometimes when I'm sitting on the floor with a big stapler and a paper cut, I'm going, how old am I again? Wait a minute. But I do enjoy making those books. I enjoy the craft of them, and I try and make them nice and add a little something, to them. So, again, not a huge designer, so I'm not sure a lot of them are very pretty, but it's not for lack of effort, I think.
Well, I love the one with the snowman nose.
Yeah, thanks.
The cutout carrot.
Thanks. Yeah, that was a Christmas card I sent out to people one year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, it's a lovely Christmas card.
Thanks.
It makes good as a Christmas card. Now, Petey and Pussy just came out a couple months ago. What's the next thing you're working on? Is it more Petey and Pussy?
Well, I have more Petey and Pussy stories to work on. I haven't committed myself to doing anything yet. So I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to pick up next. I have a lot of comic stories to work on. I think I'm going to take a little bit of a deep breath because I recently finished a big project for the museum.
That's right. Why don't you talk about that a little? That's pretty neat.
It's not really comics, I guess, but it took a long time. I worked on that for about 4 years, and not exclusively, but for the better part of 4 years, and it was a lot of work. And so I was just in the, I finished it just before the holidays of this past year. So I was planning on just taking a little bit of breather, cleaning up my studio a little bit. I've collected a lot of stuff to work on over the past 4 years, ideas and little beginnings of little stories, but so I'm looking at different things. I'm actually considering doing a newspaper strip, a syndicated strip, and doing that for a little while. I always enjoyed the newspapers. The only problem is this is not a really great time for newspapers. So,
no.
But it's not a really great time for anything. It's not really a great time to come out with a new comic book either. It's tough. Well, it's just the reality of the situation. So I think I'm going to take a little bit of a breather and then follow through on some of these projects that I've been sitting on my desk while I've been tackling that poster.
Well, for now, people can check out various comic strips on your website.
Yep, FontenellePress.com. That's right.
Yep. And PD and Pussy from Fantagraphics.
Yep.
And much more.
Yeah, if more to come. Stay tuned.
Will you be at comic conventions like MoCA and SPX and things like that?
I've gotten shut out of MoCA the last couple of years.
What?
I haven't been able to get... I had a little... Well, it doesn't really matter, but I missed a year and then had trouble getting back in, and I've been on the waiting list and stuff. I felt terrible about it, and I think this past year I went and Jason Shiga had a table set up outside the Puck building to sell his comic. And I was like, you go. And
Jason's
I sort of didn't
awesome.
Feel so bad. I'm like, if this guy can't get in...
He's Eisner nominated.
What's that?
He got nominated for an Eisner.
I know. Well, that's what I'm saying. If this guy's got to peddle his stuff out on the sidewalk, I should not feel so bad. But I'm hoping now that they're moving to a bigger place that I will be able to get in there. It'd be nice to be able to go to the convention that's in your own backyard.
Yeah.
This past year I did SPX. I hadn't done that in about 4 years, and I enjoyed that quite a bit. I hadn't been to that new location, but that was pretty nice, I thought. And I'd like to go back to that, but we'll see. The conventions are hard to do when you don't have something new to sell.
Mm-hmm.
The fans, they want to see something new, so a lot of it'll depend on if I've got something to sell.
All right. Well, you got PD and Pussy.
Yeah. Well, hopefully.
I do know it's in stores.
Yeah, it is somewhere.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today,
Robin. It was a real pleasure. I appreciate being on.
It's swell to talk to you, John. And I hope you have a swell day.
All right, thanks so very much.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
That was John Kirschbaum. His book is PD and Pussy, as well as his comic was a Weekly Reader, and he has a whole bunch of other stuff. You can check on his website, FontenellePress.com, with a lovely logo of a man pushing his, or a hand pushing its finger into a skull. If you do not know what a fontanelle is, please Google it. Inkstud, CITR 101.9 FM. And, thanks for listening, folks. Bye-bye.
Thanks to everyone for everything you've done, but now it's time to go. You know it's hard, we've had some fun, but now the moment's come, it's time.